2015. Candidates should also plan on being present at the March 23rd, 6 p.m. KBOO Board of Directors meeting to present a short statement about why they are interested in joining KBOO Board of Directors. Again, KBOO is looking for qualified candidates to serve on the Board of Directors. Application due March 13th and public presentations will be made March 23rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm/boardvacancies2015.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 25th Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursdays through Sundays, now through March 8th, in celebration of Black History Month at Portland Community College Cascade Campus. The theme this year is Africa Through African Lenses, and features the films Half of a Yellow Sun, Finding Fela, Lessons of Basketball and War, Under the Starry Sky, and many more. That's the 25th Cascade Festival of African Films at PCC Cascade, 705 North Killingsworth in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
June. The season is changing. Portland's rain is stubborn. It shares the sky with summer sun, refusing to leave, refusing to let the flowers breathe. But summer is determined. Her sun pushes through the cracks of the clouds, making room for her light. By July, the sun will win. And in August, we will ask her to go easy on us. We will sweat and suck popsicles, sleep under fans, and swear this is the hottest summer ever, even though we said that last year. But now we are going back and forth, umbrella up, umbrella down, jacket on, jacket off. Some days there is sunshine and rain at the exact same moment. The season is changing. And every time the season changes from spring to summer, adults start saying, "Be careful out there," because they know that summer can bring shootings and chaos with her. And when violence comes, no one says, "This isn't supposed to happen here," as if this is a place where we should be accustomed to tragedy. Every summer, the media come to my neighborhood, and every fall, they come to my school. Never for good. But there is something good to see here. And not just all the new pretty houses and shops that line Jackson Avenue now. There is something good here. And not just because more white families have moved to this side of town. There's always been something good here. People just have to open their minds to see it. This is Patricia Welch. You're listening to Black Book Talk. I was reading from This Side of Home, the latest book by our own Renee Watson. Renee is on the line, so I want to welcome her. Good morning, Renee. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And, of course, when I introduce you, I have to say Renee Watson, author, educator, actress. You are truly a Renaissance woman, and Portland is proud to claim you as our own, even though now you are living in New York. How are you doing? The weather there is sounding crazier and crazier.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this weather is not my friend right now. But other than that, I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Okay.
Definitely missing that Portland rain. I'd rather have that than the snow.
Okay, and Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman, has just called in, so let's bring her in. Hey, Emma.
Good morning. Good morning, Renee.
Good morning.
It's not raining today. We have sunshine.
Oh, I'm even more jealous. Why you got to tell me that?
Because we want you to move back to Portland. But actually, you were here recently.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what you're doing. We're certainly going to talk about your book, but we do want people to know all of the other things that you bring to the table. So tell us about your last visit to Portland.
I was in Portland. It was the launch of my book tour. So I was there to, you know, do some promotion for this side of home, but also to do poetry workshops and school visits. So I was able to go all over the place. I was at Jefferson High School, Ockley Green, Chief Joseph. Where else did I go? I was in Milwaukee. So, yeah, I did a lot of visits with young people and getting them to write about home and what they love and what they want to critique about some places that they love and where they grew up.
Now, I didn't hear this. Did you mention that you were at the Kenton Library doing a writer's workshop?
Yes, I also was at the Kenton Library. I did an intergenerational workshop, which was so moving to me to have all these ages in the room writing about memory and place. And yeah, it was beautiful. It was a very beautiful day. And of course, I was at North Portland Library Ranch as well. You guys hosted me to have my big kickoff reading.
Oh, I'd never be one to say that.
Portland showed up, which was really nice to have family and friends and former
yes.
teachers in the audience. It was a really special night.
There was so much love. I'm sorry, Emma, go on.
And didn't you do something for teachers at McMiniman?
I did. I didn't mention the whole itinerary, but yes. So I was also with the Organ Writing Project at McMiniman's, which was, I think it was about 100 teachers there. And we spent the morning together. We did some writing together, and I read from the book. I was at Reynolds High School. I don't think I mentioned there either. So, yeah, I got to be with I was at Writers in the School downtown at Literary Arts doing some workshops about the whole Black Lives Matter movement and thinking about how do we talk about what's going on in our world with young people through writing. So, yeah, I was a busy, busy writer being on tour, but it was all fun and rewarding.
You know, I want to offer apologies. I did a reading from the first chapter of The Side of Home, your latest book, and listeners, only because Renee said she didn't have a copy of her book with her, because what you really want, if you have the opportunity, is you want to hear Renee read Renee's work. It is a wonderful thing. It is just beautiful. But I have to admit, the writing in this book, all your books, but I'm just at the moment kind of in love with this one. It's just so lovely that, you know, even without your voice, I think people are going to enjoy it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I was very pleased to see you had written a young adult book.
Yeah, you know, this story just, it fit for that age group. And so I tried my hand at YA. It's my first young adult novel. So I was nervous about writing in the voice of older teens because my other work is for, you know, younger age groups. So I'm glad that it's being well received and I'm excited to continue to share it with teenagers.
What do you mean by it fit for this age group? Tell us a little bit more about that whole process.
Well, I mean, there were some practical things, like because they are in high school, then you're kind of writing for other high schoolers who are reading the book, but also thinking about, you know, they're both twin sisters who are identical, are on the brink of so much change in their life. And I feel like that is just good territory to write about for adolescent, for the adolescent years, because everything is changing constantly. Your body is changing. Your family is often going through a lot of changes, and in this case, their neighborhood as well. So it was just I feel like the themes of the book worked well with that teenage angst and teenage, you know, think you know yourself, but really you're still finding yourself. So it was a good
So is that how the process goes? I mean, did the idea that you wanted to write about certain things and then you said, okay, this would be great for teens? Or at some point had you said, I want to do a teen book, and the topic came to you? You know, well, so what came first, the chicken or the egg?
I honestly was a little more organic than that. I started this book at Jefferson High School when I was a junior in Linda Christensen's English class. Of course, you know, back then I didn't know that I was writing a novel. It was a short story. The Fred Meyer on MLK and Killingsworth had just changed into the police precinct. And I think the Whole Foods had come on 15th and Fremont. So I was noticing some changes, and I didn't have the vocabulary or the knowledge to say this is gentrification or anything, but I just felt that these changes weren't necessarily for the people who were already living in the community. And so I started writing the story then, and it was a short story at the time. So now that I'm an adult and I really understand what happened there and have lived in other places where it's happened, like Brooklyn, and now I live in Harlem, I just felt like, okay, I need to revisit this theme. And because I was already writing it as teenagers, I just kept it as it was originally written when I was in high school. So yeah, this is an old story for me in the sense of these characters have lived with me for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what's coming up?
I'm sorry?
What's coming up? Is there a story going around in your brain now?
You know, right now I am so in the promotion mode and all these events, it's really hard to create. So I've just been journaling and taking photographs of the many places that I've been able to go and travel to and kind of just processing all of this and staying in the moment. I have some, you know, I have ideas of what I might work on, but I'm not working on anything right now. I've been thinking about, and Patricia will know, a lot of the questions at the event in Portland, people ask, are you going to do a poetry book one day? So I've been thinking about that. So maybe that's next, but I'm not sure.
Well, you know what? It hits me. I know about this book. Emma knows about this book. But the little threads that we've given to the audience might not be enough without telling everything. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about this side of home, please.
So this side of home is about the main character. Her name is Maya. Her twin sister is Nikki. They've lived in Northeast Portland their whole life across the street from their best friend, Essence. And when the landlord decides to flip the house and renovate it, he has to kind of kick Essence and her mom out because they can no longer afford it, and he remodels it. And Maya is very upset about this, because she understands what that means, that black people are being pushed out of the neighborhood. And when a white family moves in, she ends up having to kind of be challenged with what she believes about the change that's come to her neighborhood. She befriends the son of the family who moves in, and is kind of having to deal with how do you remain loyal to your community and how do you grapple with your own identity as a young black girl, but also think about relationships with white people as romantic relationships and in friendships. So those are kind of the larger themes in the book. Nikki is very excited about all the change. So she's going to all the new shops and the new stores, and she really enjoys the newness of the neighborhood. And so the two of them, although they've been the same their whole life, they're really starting to kind of depart and realize how different they are.
The whole issue of just change, I mean, it's, you know, we're all looking at it and we're all talking about it. Mm-hmm. Gentrification, a part of me is like, ah, you know, the whole neighborhood is beginning to look like Hawthorne Street and North mm-hmm. Portland was distinct. And yet change is absolutely a part of life. But one of the people who was in the audience at your lecture at the library said, okay, this is a book about gentrification. And you said, no. I mean, that's an important theme, but it isn't. It's more than that. Mm-hmm. So, as I read it, I thought, this is a book about gentrification. So I'm just saying, you know, that's what started it. Tell us some more about the other things that you think are important. You touched on them, but, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's also about friendship, about what it means to be loyal, what it means to be your true self. How to let go of cultural expectations that are on you, even sometimes your own expectations that you put on yourself. Like, So those issues transcend, I think, gentrification or just talking about, you know, those themes, and that's that could be about any teenager, I feel. So I'm always telling people, okay, well, maybe you don't live in Portland and your neighborhood hasn't changed, but I think, you know, you as the teacher or your students could relate to the characters, because it's also about navigating relationships and how do you, you know, stay true to your core values while also being open and accepting of other people's beliefs. So it's about those things as well.
You're
and
right.
To me, the backdrop is that it's happening against, you know, the backdrop of gentrification, and also, you know, the principal in the school, her school is also changing.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's also about how do you, as a young person, and in this case, as a young Black girl, how do you use your voice? And what do you decide to stand up for and fight back against?
Yes.
Which she has to do a lot at her school, to kind of speak back to authority, which is, I think, hard for young people to grapple with.
Hard for adults.
Yes, that too. Yeah. Yes, indeed.
So how you were writing this since you were a teenager, but once you decided to really finish the novel, how long did it take?
You know, I stopped counting. After the fifth or sixth draft, I just stopped counting. It really was, it took a long time to write this manuscript. And again, you know, I didn't write consistently all those years, so it was a short story. And I think I picked it up again maybe in 2008 or 9 and started working on it. So that can give you a little context of it just got published in 2015. And part of that is just, you know, life happened, and so I would write on it consistently and then put it down. And I kept going back and forth of, is this a story that's necessary? Do I want to tell this story? Or is this just me venting? Like, is this about me working through my issues with Portland? Should it even be a book? So there was a lot of that. And once I realized, no, I want to tell this story, my editor and I, we went back and forth a lot about, you know, revisions and just thinking about, you know, having the love story between Tony and Maya and how much is too much and all of that. So there were lots and lots of revisions to get it to what you all have now.
They were all to the kid. Can I ask you something? I want to ask you something away from your books.
Sure.
You have a one-woman show called Roses Are... Rose, wait a minute.
Roses are red, women are blue.
Are blue, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it debuted at the Lincoln Center as a showcase for emerging artists. Tell us more about that.
So that show is kind of a collection of monologues. I play all these different women, different ages. And the common theme is, you know, some type of loss or tragedy that's happened in their lives that are kind of things that women go through. And there's a rose in each story, and there's a reason why someone has a rose. So, for instance, there's a widow, and she is picking up the rose from her husband's casket, and she talks about their relationship and her fears now of being left without him to live out the rest of her years. A woman who is in an abusive relationship, and he brings her flowers to say sorry. So, you know, there's all these stories about how women get roses and why.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that show is about. And I did that a few years ago now at the Lincoln Center in a showcase where other artists were also presenting their work. It was my first big New York event, like when I first moved here. So, yeah, that was a really proud moment to be able to present work in that way on a stage like that.
Yeah.
Is anything else planned for stage in the future?
I haven't, not officially, but I am working on another one-woman show, actually, called Black Like Me, and it's my story about growing up as a Black girl in the Pacific Northwest. So I debuted some of those poems the night of the reading at North Portland Library to open up the show for introducing the book to the audience. I read a few of those poems, and I'm thinking about what that will look like as a full show. I've been, this side of home is definitely fiction. even though it's realistic fiction. So it really is not my story verbatim or anything, but the One Woman Show will be my own personal stories about growing up in Portland.
As a preview, I would say, you know, you are really clearly well-loved here at home. That could be seen in all the programs I've ever seen you at. You have a core audience of folks who are going to follow you. I think it must have taken a lot of courage and chutzpah to leave here, and I don't know if you did it directly, but to leave here and go to New York, and you seem to have really made it in New York. You've done well. I mean, how many people are on the stage of Lincoln Center for benefit of, especially for younger people who might hear this? Could you tell us a little bit about how you did that? Because a whole lot of folks, they want to go to New York, they don't, or they go to New York, and New York is so New York, they
right.
just turn tail and come home. But you are yeah. doing well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I moved to New York when I was older, so I think that probably played a part. I just was a little more mature and knew what I wanted in a way that maybe if I had come to live, you know, fresh out of high school, I might not have stayed. I don't know. But when I did come, I was coming for school. So I went to the new school, and this is what I tell young people, you know, coming for school, you automatically have a built-in community. So it was easy for me to meet people. There were always things happening on the campus. So I really had a kind of safety net to keep me here those first few years of me living here. And I actually didn't think I would stay. I was coming for school and planning to come, you know, back to Portland after I graduated. My last year in school is when I got signed with Random House for A Place Where Hurricanes Happen. So I said, okay, well, let me see if this writing thing will work and if, you know, if I can make a living here. And so I stayed. So, yes, I do encourage young people to think about their education and where do they want to go to school, what do they want to study, and, you know, pursue your dreams. It's been hard. I miss home, and I'm very close to my family, so it's been very hard to be away. But I do get back often, which is something that is important to me, that I didn't want to be a Portlander who left and never came back, because I do feel, you know, I need to give back to my community. And so when I'm there, I make sure that I'm trying to set up a school visit at Jefferson or Vernon because I went to those schools, or, you know, do something at a church or a library, because it's really important to me to continue to be in conversation with Portland and to show love and to not forget where I came from.
Well, so you went to Vernon?
I did, yeah. I went to Vernon for elementary school, and I went to Binsmead for middle school, which I know it has a different name, and I never can remember the new name of the school. And then I went to Jeff for high school.
So, okay, this side of home is fictional.
Yes.
But it seems like the high school could be Jeff. It seems like the street could be Alberta. But then again, since you did start this so far, you know, in the past, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems, something seems very recognizable.
Yes, it is realistic fiction. So absolutely, you know, I'm thinking about Jefferson High School, of course.
Uh-huh.
I do think that Jackson Street is a, you know, kind of a hybrid of Mississippi and Alberta.
Okay.
And yeah, you know, it's absolutely about home. So those in the history, the historical points in there are true. So there are some things that like ring true as far as this really happened here. The Vanport flood really did happen.
Yes.
You know, that's not fiction. But as far as did any of those things like happen to me? not necessarily. Although, of course, those moments when Maya is thinking about how white people react to her blackness as far as her hair, or calling her, you know, she's smarter than the others and things like that, absolutely, I've had those moments. So, yes, it's fiction, but it's absolutely based on true things that I've either seen, you know, like witnessed them or have happened to me.
And who was Ethel Payne?
Activist, a writer, journalist, a woman who decided to tell our story, which I love. Thank you for bringing that up. I think one of my favorite parts of the book is that Maya's discovering a legacy of writers and people who chose to speak up and use their voice. And in the written word, and verbally, to tell our stories, which is important to me, you know, to put on record our experience. And I think when I was going to schools and visiting while I was there, and I'm starting to do that here on the East Coast, I'll be in D.C. next week talking to young people. And I think it's important for us to know our history, but and also to put on record now what we're feeling and thinking, because our stories tend to get lost or we get misrepresented when they're told by other people.
Would you mind if I read chapter 2 for our listeners? It's very, very short. It's just essentially one long page or page and a half, because I just want people to hear your voice again in this book.
Sure.
Okay, chapter
Thank
2.
You.
This is the way it is. Nikki and I are identical twins, and our best friend is Essence. Mom says it's like she has triplets, the way the three of us do everything together, the way we do anything for one another. And she's right. Essence is more like a sister than a friend. So when she stops at my locker after school and whispers to me, "We're moving," I get a sick feeling in my stomach. The landlord is selling the house, she says, casual, like what she's saying is no big deal, like she hasn't lived directly across the street from me and Nikki our whole lives. Like we never sat on her porch swing on summer nights, swinging away to imaginary places. Like she never tiptoes across the asphalt in the middle of the night to come to my house so she can escape her drunk mother. He said he's tired of renting, Essence says. This time, not as casual as before, as if this is the first time she's realized that just because her posters have been hanging on her bedroom wall all these years doesn't mean those walls belong to her. She owns nothing, not even those hand-me-down blues records singing in her eyes. Where will you go, I ask. Gresham, probably, or maybe North Portland. We don't know yet. Both places are far, at least 45 minutes away by bus. Too far for best friends who've had to take only 10 steps to get to each other their entire lives. Don't look at me like that, Essence says. This is her way of telling me she is about to cry, and Essence hates to cry. I look away, pretend I'm okay. Chapter 2 from This Side of Home by Renee Watson. I want to thank you for presenting images that we don't see enough, images of healthy and whole young women who are being raised by healthy and whole and involved and active parents who go to a good high school with caring teachers and actually, you know, caring administrators, maybe a little wrong-minded from where some of us sit, but still just representative of the many actually healthy and whole young African-American youngsters who we don't see enough in the media, who we don't see in the news. And so just presenting that kind of story of youngsters who are talking about what colleges they're going to and who have options and who are leaders, just for that alone, and there's so much more, you know, I thank you for this book. I really, really do.
Thank you. It was very important to me to, you know, I don't even want to say portray, because that implies like I'm making it up, mm-hmm. but I wanted to just kind of shine a light on the young people who I know and who I grew up with, too. You know, that is very real. I grew up with people who had goals and dreams for their lives. I work with young people who are like Maya and Charles and Star, you know, in the book. And yeah, I do think there's a lack of representation of especially brown children who live this kind of lifestyle. It was extremely important for me after, you know, I wrote What Mama Left Me, which is also true. I know that story as well, but I needed to make sure that I tell a balance of the African-American experience in America and not just the sad, downtrodden story. So, yeah, it was important for me to do that. Thank you for acknowledging it.
Absolutely.
And thank you for being our guest today.
Yes.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to both of you. I really appreciate your support. Thank you.
Okay. I want to encourage our listeners to go to Renee's website, and you can just, you know, Google Renee Watson. There's so much there. I haven't had a chance to do it, but when I go back, I am going to click on the image and listen to your speech at the International Symposium on Cultural Diplomacy at the United Nations headquarters last summer. You are so modest. I'd have like I'd not have the Goodyear blimp going through Portland talking about that, but But there's so much of you that we want to share with the city. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
And look forward to seeing and talking to you again.
Yes. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, March 5th, 2015. At a press conference today, the parents of Michael Brown announced that they would file a wrongful death civil case. Brown, an African-American teenager, was killed by a white police officer last summer in Ferguson, Missouri, a suburb of St. Louis. The announcement comes the day after two new developments in Brown's case. The U.S. Department of Justice announced, after a six-month investigation, that Darren Wilson, who killed Brown, will not face federal charges. Attorney General Eric Holder said that Brown's death, quote, did not involve prosecutable conduct on the part of Officer Wilson. At the same time, the Department of Justice released a report that found widespread racism on the part of the mostly white police department against Ferguson's African-American community, which constitutes about 70% of the city's population. Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circuses are phasing out elephants from their live shows. The company says that the animals will not perform after 2018 and will all relocate to a facility in Florida. The move comes over concerns of abuse of the animals and over pressure from activists and local governments. Asheville, North Carolina has banned exotic animals from performing, while Los Angeles has banned the use of bull hooks, small staffs with a spike and a hook on them that trainers use to steer the animals. Though they are phasing out elephants, Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey will continue to use other animals, like lions and tigers, in its show. Oregon State Senate will decide on a new voter registration effort today. The so-called Motor Voter Bill would automatically register all licensed drivers in the state to vote. The bill passed in the state house in February. If passed by the Senate, it would register some 300,000 new voters. Democrats like Governor Brown favor the bill as a way to make it easier for voters to participate in elections. Some Republicans have expressed concern over the program's costs and security.